Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts now.
In this episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast, which, by the way, starts right now, as Captain AI, our song leader, just said a little bit ago, this episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast features several breaking news headlines. Number one, Mr. Huyen is done. Harvest over, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk about Harvest Bingo, which is a fun and exciting game that Mr. Huyen takes care of on his farm while in the combine. We're going to talk bridge payments. We've got the latest and greatest information, or non-information, be it what it is. Let's talk about these bridge payments that are supposed to be coming our way in February. We will talk a little bit more about the upcoming USDA reports in January and what that can or can't do to the marketplace. And who knows what else we will get into in this episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast. Once again, as always, brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance, Northern Indiana office, 574-253-3433. We'll talk a little bit more about Mac America at the end, but we thank them for their continued support of the podcast. Mr. Huyen, you made it in today.
We made it in. We flew in on the sled.
Yeah. No, you did not. You did not. There's no snow to run a sled on out there.
We greased everything up and got across it. There was snow in that cornfield I finished up today, though.
Oh, yeah. So harvest is done for Mr. Huyen. There was snow in the cornfield, but there's no snow here at Blue Bottle Farms. A lot of snow left this past week when we hit. We were in the 50s, not any higher than about 51, 52 in my area. What were we? Let's see. It would have been last, I think Thursday was the warmest day ahead of that rain that came in.
Absolutely. We took care of that Thursday by starting to clean up a little bit. We weren't done at that point in time, but we were cleaning up around another checkoff on the bingo sheet.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. But, yeah, it was warm on Thursday. Do you know how much rain you got? This is the time of year that my rain gauge is upside down, Charlie. I don't want it to break out of the freeze. Do you know what you got?
Our rain varied from location to location. It was a span from our southern areas around Argus being a half inch to up by South Bend, which got 3/10.
Okay, so 3 to 5/10 for you. I feel like, at least the way folks talked about it over this way, Warsaw, Claypool, Silver Lake, I feel like the totals were a little bit higher because folks mentioned that it rained fairly steadily and moderately so pretty much through a good chunk of the Thursday midday afternoon and evening time frame. I was on the road over in Ohio, and based on what I saw, we got barely nothing. I kind of drove through two areas of precipitation as it was going. So I think in this area, if I had the rain gauge out, it would probably be closer to 3/4 is what I'm guessing here. What I can tell you is, as you drive past some of the fields in here, and you came past some of them, you can see water that had still stood before it froze, because then you had that ice on the top, but it's not every low area. It's only key little ones here and there. So in my mind, that means we did not see an inch plus rain over a large area.
I absolutely, like I said, the trend was the more southern you got, the more south you went, the more rain you got. And which was great because our combines were parked north.
Good. Yeah, you had to finish up farther north. So, yeah, the temperatures here over the next little bit are going to be a little bit interesting. Of course, this is the week of Christmas. If you have been dreaming of a white Christmas, your dreams will not come true. It's just not going to happen this year. As I think I said, multiple places. I've used the line multiple times. The only place you'll find a white Christmas is going to be a receding snow pile at a Walmart parking lot. So those will still be white.
I got my big pile by my trash can.
Yeah, you have one too. So the ones actually in my drive, they're gone. Well, they will be gone by Thursday. Christmas Day is high around here. Could be flirting with 60 degrees. I don't think we quite get there, Charlie, but 57 degrees Christmas afternoon kind of makes you hope you get a fun toy to go out and play in the yard with.
Absolutely. Bicycles. BB guns.
I would like to see you riding a bicycle in your front yard at your age. That'd be fun.
I got a bicycle that I use.
Do you ride it in the front yard doing stunts?
No, I don't.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. Christmas Day, you take the bicycle out there, ride down the hill, and jump over your brother or something.
You know, though, I do cheat with it. My electric bicycle.
Oh, you got the e-bike.
I got the e-bike, and it gets a lot of times strapped to the backside of a sprayer boom.
In case you have to ride out of the field to get some help.
To ride out of the field to get help or move a semi or...
So I got my wife one of those e-bikes about 2 years ago now. She hasn't ridden it very much. She wants me to get one as well to ride. And I don't know which one to get. You know, when we were in Hawaii earlier this past year, the place we were staying had a couple of e-bikes that we could use. And that was a great place to use them. You know, the range on that e-bike would be enough to get around probably the island that we were on. So it was really nice. And I like them. But, you know, I don't know.
I found it to be very useful, the one that I got. I got two different ones. One's more of a high-speed, high-power one for really going across. That's the one I take across fields. The other one is not very fast, but you can go the distance. So you can.
Okay.
I've used it to move equipment 5 miles.
Really? Just strap it to the equipment, take the equipment out, and ride the bike
Absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. Huh. It's light enough that I throw it on top of the whatever tillage equipment I have or put it on hook it up to the spray boom, pick it up, and take it with me, drop it off wherever I need it. And
see, I had never thought of looking at an e-bike as a farm purchase to use for things like that. But now that you mention it, how many times have I found myself walking back or calling one of my neighbors here at the farm trying to get a bum a ride back to the farm because I took the combine down, but I really need to have the tractor or the six-wheeler or something down there with me. So it actually makes a hell of a lot of sense.
One of the guys, what was one of the funny stories that we have is we had a fertilizer tender truck.
Okay.
And my dad was giving our employee grief why he's welding this quick hitch to the back of the tender truck. And the guy goes, well, I have no clue why Charlie told me to do it. He just said, here's the parts, weld this to the back bumper, and it's not light enough to tow anything. I go, yep, it's for this right here. And I pull out the bike rack and plug it right in. And he goes, yeah. Oh. I see where this is going now.
Yeah.
How many times did Charlie get stuck with this fertilizer truck and working by himself?
It makes a lot of sense, actually. It makes a heck of a lot of sense. Now, I may have to go shopping for myself here sometime after the turn of the year. We'll see. Maybe I can use my upcoming bridge payment.
There you go.
To get an e-bike.
You might get a big enough bridge payment, get a bike.
Have you heard about? Of course, you've heard about it. We know that $12 billion was approved by the Trump administration as aid to farmers. All right, I'll start with you. I've heard some things. I want to go over some information that I've got. But what do you know about it so far? What have you dug in?
I called up my local FSA office while I was cruising my cornfields.
Okay, just because you had nothing better to do.
Yeah, nothing better to do.
Okay.
And I quizzed them about it last Friday, and they said that they knew nothing about it except for the payments were going to be coming out in February.
I feel like, though, that should not surprise us, because when's the last time that you called your FSA office, folks, and they knew anything about anything that was going on? And I'm not trying to be disparaging on local FSA folks. They're great people. But it really seems to me, Charlie, that they are the absolute last to know about anything that's happening, even when they're the ones that are supposed to administer it. They're the last to know any details on it.
And I think that's them just going, well, we don't know anything, and we don't want to give out bad information.
Right, which I appreciate that. I definitely appreciate that. The last thing we want is have to take a mulligan on something that you said. Here's what I found, and I'll say this because what you just said is right. We don't want to feed out bad information. So I will say, as the data comes out here to start this week, we heard that it is supposed to be today, Monday. That being said, it's a holiday week. How many people at USDA? Well, actually, nobody at USDA should be on PTO this week. They took their PTO
a long time ago.
A month and a half ago. But anyway, in any case, it's early this week. We're supposed to find out. But I did see some interesting reading over the weekend on the old ag web, and this was a story about the Farmer Bridge Assessment Payments and FarmDoc. You know about FarmDoc?
Absolutely. Those are the folks from University of Illinois.
That's right. It's part of the group over there at U of I. And so they have done some research and some calculating. And here's what they say. All right. So we'll just kind of pass this through. Again, source, Farm Journal, Ag Web. You can look at this yourself if you want. But we're just going to kind of run through it here. The payments are supposed to go $11 billion to row crops, which we knew, $1 billion to specialty crops. We kind of mentioned that the last podcast here, kind of laughing a little bit about specialty crops. Payments, as your local FSA office said, February, toward the end of February 2026. Why that's funny to me, Charlie, is because what was the latest kick the can down the road on the 12 million metric tons of China buying?
February.
Yeah, the end of February. Yeah, so this is interesting. We're going to try and wrap it all up together. So the formula for figuring payments, FarmDoc says, will be similar to ECAP. Now, I'm sorry. I get lost in all my acronyms. I don't know what ECAP was. I'm pretty sure it was the last one or two payment calculations, some program that money got sent to farmers, but I can't remember which one it was. Do you remember?
I can't either.
All right. So anyway.
Don't feel alone here.
If you know what ECAP is, drop us a line, put it on the Facebook page, tell us what the hell ECAP is, because Charlie and I are sitting here scratching our heads. Anyway, that they should be calculated similar. And so the CPA at FarmDoc, Paul Niefer, said he used the calculated payments using a mid-year average price. So last year's mid-year soybean price was about $10.20. This year, $10.50, as they're saying. So that means the price actually increased on soybeans. So FarmDoc says soybeans might have a reduced rate, but all the other crops, especially wheat and rice, are probably going to see a 10 to 15% increase versus ECAP. Again, don't know what that is. So anyway, a lot of what was interesting here is they were looking at, FarmDoc was looking at the relative profitability of crops this year. So, for example, on the soybean side, they're saying that there was a loss of only X, but on corn, corn growers may get the biggest, according to FarmDoc. A bridge payment of $46 an acre is the estimate. But they're calculating in that a negative $170 per acre margin on corn this year. Agree or disagree? $170 upside down per acre?
I disagree.
Charlie disagrees. I am with you on that. I mean, I've heard some horror stories that guys are upside down 100, 120, 170 seemed high. We'll see. So $170 negative margin on corn with a calculated payment of 46. On soybeans, FarmDoc estimates losses of $83 an acre. I vehemently disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Yes.
Are soybeans even negative?
Not my book.
All right. But you have some pretty damn good books, all right?
That's true.
So, let's just zoom out and let's think on the side of Northern Indiana on the whole. First question, are we negative on soybean returns in Northern Indiana?
You know, thinking back on it, if you sold your beans in the fall of the year, if you went mm-hmm. and sold your beans at the fall of the year, what was it? Minus 25 cent
basis? It was 25 cent basis, and the futures got down to the low 10s. So you were probably selling 975, so, 980.
That would be tough. That would be tough to make money on.
Okay. But how much of the farming populace in the northern part of the state would you think, percentage-wise? Because in order for that to happen, Charlie, we would have to come rolling in at 0% sold at the time we run the combine with no storage.
Right.
And I don't think there's that many, percentage-wise. 20%? 25% that would be in that camp?
Maybe? I was thinking 10.
10. All right. So 10 to 20% are maybe seeing negative margins, but if you had the ability to put beans away, and look, maybe
even if
you
had
sprayed
to hold off a month.
Yeah, but even if you had to spray fungicide three times, or if you had to do like I did and spray a herbicide pass three times, still, if you were negative, I would think you were only 10 to $20 an acre negative on soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's interesting. Now, again, these numbers are nationwide. So we just talked northern Indiana. I'm not going to speak to how they do stuff in Iowa. You know, so maybe things are negative. But anyway, FarmDoc is calculating a $25 per acre estimated bridge payments. So that means on corn, of the $11 billion, they have $4.5 billion going to corn farmers and $2 billion to beans. Of course, in this article, the new president of the American Soybean Association says, yada, 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 blah, 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 we need more, blah, 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 whatever. But we go into the others. Charlie, this was the year, if you were farming for government subsidy, to be a rice farmer. Rice farmers are supposedly, according to FarmDoc, going to get $134 an acre.
You know, I got some muck ground.
It probably could grow some rice.
I think so.
Have you ever seen rice farming? How they seed it and pull it off?
That looks rough, though.
You got to have some stones to do that on muck ground because they flood it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that combine still stays afloat. I don't know how they do that, but you know, Dave talked about it, but we won't talk about it too much here. However, what's interesting is FarmDoc used losses per acre at $446 per acre for rice, and that is almost twice what the University of Arkansas has penciled in for a loss on rice. So again, that's why I'm taking these numbers somewhat worth a grain of salt out of FarmDoc. I'm not doubting their calculations or their intent, but if you're looking at this versus how far above or below ground the economics were on crops, I think you get in trouble. I think you get in trouble here a little bit. Wheat, pretty good here this year. Wheat coming in at, let's see, what was it? Well, cotton's coming in at $115 an acre on the bridge payments. Peanuts, I know you're a big peanut farmer, Charlie, $64 an acre.
You know, we're going to fill that out on the survey.
That's right. Peanuts.
We're going to put cotton down, too.
I'll tell you what. Well, we may try and grow some cotton and peanuts out in the old high tunnel here. I think that'll be fun.
We can do that.
I've been curious about peanuts. I'll be honest with you. First of all, I love peanuts, but they're a legume. But that's what I've seen cotton production. I spent a lot of time in Kansas. I've seen large-scale cotton production. I understand that. Sorghum's easy. Milo's easy. I understand large-scale oat production. But of all of these ones that are on here, I even understand rice production more than I understand peanut farming. That's one. Maybe, Charlie, you and I should take the Red Barn Roadshow out a little bit farther, head down to Georgia, and learn about peanuts.
Hmm.
Because that one's interesting to me. Anyway, $64 an acre. Wheat's at $39. Milo, sorghum, $48 an acre. And oats coming in at $92. I think that $92 an acre will probably account for maybe $1,155 because I believe there's only like one or two oat farmers in the country anymore. Oh, goodness gracious. So that's what we know. February, but we should have more clarity here this week as long as USDA stays on track and does release the calculation ideas. But again, I would say, Charlie, if I was you, I wouldn't call your FSA office back this week. I'd probably give them a little bit of chance to ingest the data and figure out what kind of software they're even using to calculate. The other thing that I want to bring up, there was a story on Hoosier Ag Today on the website last week that mentioned that there was a deadline of last Friday, the 19th, to be eligible for these bridge payments. And again, I was traveling, so I didn't get a chance to call my FSA office and see if this was true. But Hoosier Ag Today made it sound like there was something to do with acreage certification to be involved in this year's. Charlie, didn't we do that back in July?
Yeah.
I thought I did.
We did ours back in July for sure, around the 15th.
So I don't know what else. I know that there are going to be applications that come out once they release how the payments are going to be calculated. I'm pretty sure we're all going to have to fill out applications, and that'll be to us here.
You know, now that I think about it, there's been times on occasions that we've had to certify something screwy like wheat way late. And maybe that's what they mean, that if you have a late certification, that it had to be done by
Friday. But wouldn't that certification be for wheat that you planted back in October?
Well, like if you had corn and if you're a smaller producer and go, oh, I only had 10 acres of corn or whatever.
Oh, I see. Because I know that the only deadlines that I know are that pop up here when we get into December is, look, your crop insurance programs, usually there's in the fine print or somewhere, you've got to be done with harvest by, fill in the blank, let's say
December 10th.
December 10th. That's where I was going to go. I'm glad I still have that one right. So you had to, since you just finished up here recently, you probably had to call your crop insurance agent and get a little bit of an extension, didn't you?
Absolutely. We had to call up and actually put in a claim for what we didn't have, and we'll be withdrawing that claim.
Okay. So you put in a claim for what you hadn't harvested yet.
Right.
And then you withdraw.
Just in case we had like a major windstorm and blew it all down, or fire or something like that.
Right. So other than that, that's the only reporting that I can ever remember having to do in December, and it doesn't happen very often. So again, we'll just have to see what happens here this week, but there will be more data forthcoming. We know it, and just have to see what's going to come together. Other than that, look, you're done with harvest now. What are you doing with all your spare time?
Boy, you know, we discussed this to a great extent with the boys. And it's ski season now.
Where are you going to go ski? There's no snow anywhere.
You know, we go to a little place up in Michigan called Swiss Valley.
Right.
They're about an hour away from the farm, which is great to have a good conversation with the boys, figure out what's going on with their life now that harvest is over, and do a little skiing, de-think through everything.
Right.
Because nothing gets your mindset straight than standing on top of a slope that's straight down.
Oh, it's not straight down. Wow. I've been to Swiss Valley. If you're going to call this straight down, dear heavens, Charlie.
Well, you know, when
they have double black diamond slopes at Swiss Valley, and the folks in Colorado look at you and laugh.
You're absolutely diamond. Right, but for me, when I'm looking at all the ice and Michigan ice and everything else and watching my son go straight down and do a couple curves and go through the mobiles and hit the jumps, I'm going like, you want me to do what, son?
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't land very well with Charlie.
Yeah. and Charlie probably doesn't land very well either at this age, right?
Right. In fact, my son lovingly says that I look like an angry bird coming down the slopes.
All right. Well, does that mean you're wearing green, or are you red, or are you one of the black ones?
He said I was an angry red bird.
Red angry bird.
Coming down the slope. Very determined. Well, to land and not land.
Well, if you're the angry bird, that must make your son the piggy, right?
You're right.
I know way too much about this stupid game, unfortunately. Way too damn much.
Now we know what you do on your spare time.
No, I do. You know what? I don't think, is Angry Birds even a thing anymore? That was like early in the internet days, wasn't it? Or early in the Android phone days or something.
They might be still around. We'll have to check them out.
Speaking of games, you told me here before we started talking that you always put together a bingo game as you go into Harvest, but this year you actually scored a bingo on your Harvest game, right?
Absolutely. I got a bingo card.
Right.
And we're going like, well, what could possibly go wrong during Harvest? Because we have a Murphy office up above our farm office.
Okay.
Murphy's very good at stepping out and causing like little chaos. So some of the things on my bingo card is getting the combine and grain cart stuck at the same time.
Okay. Was that a hit or a miss this year?
That was a hit.
That was a hit. Both the combine and the grain cart stuck at the same
time.
Okay. Was it the combine that was emptying into the grain cart? So same field, or was it combine stuck in this field and grain cart stuck in another operation?
Well, this is where it gets a little hairy.
Oh, here we go.
It's a good story,
though. All right, I'm here.
So I'm running the grain cart. My combine operator's filling me up, and we get a little too crazy with the operation. And I get the grain cart stuck, but the combine's still unstuck. So we come up with the idea of unloading the grain cart into the combine
to lighten the load makes
before
sense.
We pull this out.
Right.
Well, in the process of unloading the grain cart back into the combine, mm-hmm. we stick the combine.
Hmm. Okay.
So.
All right. So was that in that was one space, though, combine and grain cart stuck.
Right.
Okay. So what else? Because bingo, last time I checked, you have to have at least five across.
Then we got a doctor visit from a farm incident.
Oh, fantastic.
Grandpa took care of that for us.
Okay, all right. So that's what we call in the industry a recordable.
Reportable.
Okay.
Reportable thing of doing something that we shouldn't be doing.
Right.
Cleaning off the truck
okay.
with the forklift.
Oh, jeez.
Without the pallets.
Oh, good grief. All right. So next, Grandpa went to the hospital. All right, next.
Then we got... Oh, what was it? We got a combine stuck on its own.
Okay. So two combine stucks this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a surprise from the family. My sister got married.
Oh, surprise wedding. Yeah.
Surprise wedding.
That's usually one of the outlying ones. So that's probably what got you the complete bingo this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So we got the surprise family event, which is a wedding.
Yeah.
Good luck, sis.
Uh-huh. We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. We had a baby arrive.
Okay. Before the wedding, I hope.
Well, before the wedding. This is a different couple altogether. They might as well arrive all at the same day because they all were within a week.
Oh, boy. So this bingo happened fast is what you're
yes.
saying. Okay.
But we were all very happy and very excited about this young couple who had a baby.
Good.
During harvest.
Good, good,
baby's
good.
Doing great. Family's good. Doing great.
Good, good.
New parents.
First-time parents?
First-time parents.
Oh, they're in for a rude awakening.
they learned a lot about harvest time and
now we're
going to
do a bingo card. We're in one of the spaces is going to be how fast do they say, what have we done? anyway.
But broken water line.
Yeah, but you break a water line pretty much every season, Charlie.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all.
Grain dryer breakdown. Unexpected grain dryer breakdown.
But most farmers, I know about six or seven guys that had that. So, I mean, it has to be on the bingo card, sure, but not exciting.
Nah. Let's see here. What else was on the bingo card? Well, the forklift, that was pretty good.
Oh, you didn't tell me ahead of time what happened in the hospital incident. So that one is pretty good. So was anybody carried away by angry hawks or eagles? Have they come back to the grain legs at all?
No, nobody got taken away. But we did see a bald eagle sweep down and pick up a rabbit and take it away.
That's always cool.
We've actually, one of the neat sights that we've seen this fall was three bald eagles just circling the field.
Mm-hmm. And they're usually solitary. And I had the same thing happen here at the farm, not this year. It's been two, maybe 3 years back, but there were, I believe, at least three or maybe four circling right out above us here, right out above the Little Red Barn. And that was crazy. We're not that close to any. Why were they here? But they were.
Yeah, that was a majestic sight, the eagles. Now, Crazy Casey, my dog, she, God bless her heart, she's 5 years old, and she still thinks she has to track down a rabbit.
Okay.
She kept her record going. She was averaging 5 rabbits a day.
Holy cow.
Jumping out of the combine.
Wow.
And chasing these rabbits now. So
she eat them all?
And she did.
Wow. 5 rabbits a day she's eating.
About 5 rabbits a day.
That saves you on dog food right there. Wow.
Yeah, but she did a lot of running to get these rabbits.
Wow. Let's finish out here and talk. Let's shift out of the bingo and into upcoming things in January. Again, you're taking it easy here for a little bit. Harvest is done. You're focusing on cleanup, yard cleanup, getting everything out of the farmyard, back in barns. Look, I am too. The farmyard here is a mess because, well, shoot, the snow came early and it came fast. So looking to catch up as well. But once we get into January, Charlie, it's game on. Meeting season is in full swing. I've been at meetings multiple times here through the month of December, but we have the Fort Wayne Farm Show that kicks off in January. All sorts of seed and bank meetings are going to be happening. But in the midst of all of it, before all of it, and you said it best, you know, what happens there June 10, 11, 12, whenever that USDA report or data dump happens, has the ability to kickstart this market to the upside or turbocharge a move to the downside. We've got a literal mess coming at us, I think, in January.
And I think that's where we're going to get our true USDA numbers finally caught up there to tell us what direction this market's going to go. And truthfully, I think that the numbers are going to come out and the corn's going to be a lower number than what they've said in the past here. I think that soybeans are going to be higher.
Well, let's just say that I lead this by saying, bless your heart, Charlie. If you think that we're actually going to get true numbers out of USDA, bless your heart, sir. I don't. Call me too cynical, but I think they give us numbers. I think they actually change some numbers. To be clear on that, there will be finally some changes because there's been nothing for like the past couple of months. I think I'll stop short of saying that they're true. And here's what I mean on that. And we've talked about this before. Neither you or I believe at all that there's 98 million acres of corn that was planted this year. That planted acres number is not going to change. We have to watch the harvested acres number. And it should come down. But if it comes down to 97.5, big flipping deal. Yield. Again, you and I both agree, yield is not 187.
I can't see a 187 average.
But I also think that the trade was expecting in November a 181 and didn't get it. I don't think that USDA prints a 181 either. I think we end up a 184, 185. So what does that do to our carryout? That's the key. The key numbers on the report are going to be what's left over after this marketing year is done, both on corn and beans. And corn, I think that number gets sub 2 billion. And I think you're right. I think the corn market can be a little friendly. Not super bullish, but friendly. What do we get on beans? I don't think, again, we get true numbers there at all. But the key on beans is what happens to exports. Where do they put that number?
I think that they're going to have that export numbers. I don't think China's going to get the beans.
Well, even if China did, we talked about end of February to start. It probably ends up being June or July
before they actually get shipped. But even then, your soybean numbers for exports are going to be lower because they didn't buy the beans in the fall of the year.
Bingo. So the question then becomes, how much lower? Currently, we're sitting at 1.695 billion. As I think we've said here on multiple episodes, where does that go? I think it has to go to 1.5. But what do they post? The reality, though, is even if they put right now, the current carryout number is 290 million bushels. So that means they only have to drop exports 110 million bushels and leave everything else the same for carryout to get to 400. And at 400 million bushels, we don't probably like our soybean prices very much.
That's right. That's why I have a lot of them sold.
Yeah. So, and again, that's where it becomes very key. What do they post? You're Captain Naive over here. You think they're going to produce truth. I'm cynical. I don't think they produce anything close to truth. But how far either of us are wrong, you know, where do we meet in the middle on that determines, I think, as you eloquently said to start, what happens with these prices. We can firm or not. Now, seasonally, a seasonal trade on soybeans now through early January usually is buy beans because there's some firming. It feels hard to see that this year, but a seasonal says up. I don't know. A lot of times I look at major reports as inflection points. If the market is going a certain way heading into a major report, that's a key opportunity for that market to pivot and go the other way. Well, currently we're going down. So if we continue to kind of trend lower into the report, maybe it's an inflection point to go higher. There's a lot of what ifs here, but you're fairly well sold. You're not all sold, but you're fairly well sold. If some of you are listening that are not necessarily very well sold right now, and if you didn't reward the rally that was in here a few weeks ago, we really have to look at the books and your sales books very, very hard between now and when the USDA report comes out, because going into that report completely uncovered or as uncovered as you are now probably is not a good thing at this point.
I agree completely. And one of the things even on our own farm here that I'm looking at is even selling some more corn for next year.
Well, you have a bunch of it. You didn't finish harvest until just a couple days ago.
I know. But we're talking about the 26 crop.
Oh, 26 crop, yeah.
Looking at that crop and trying to lock in some profit for the following year here.
Yeah. What do you see in inputs do right now?
I think chemistry is going up. I think fertilizer is going up 20%.
How much have you locked in already of yours?
Not much.
If I'm being nosy.
We got about 50% of our fertilizer.
50?
50 sold.
Honestly, that's probably not bad.
And applied.
Oh, fall application. Okay.
We got it on the field. We got our potash on the field. A lot of it went on with our cover crop.
Mm-hmm. So what about the nitrogen?
Nitrogen?
Do you think nitrogen is going to skyrocket?
I don't look for it to skyrocket. We just kind of sit back and look at that game a little bit closer as we get closer.
What's your choice for nitrogen? What's who your grain farms like to use on nitrogen? You 28, you anhydrous, you urea, where you at?
We usually tend to stick with 28 and anhydrous ammonia. We just got a new anhydrous bar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To help us out with that anhydrous application. Dad loves ammonia. I'm kind of like, whatever, Dad. We'll work with it. I'm not going to argue with you.
So you're targeting what, March? You'd like to be out with that toolbar if you could?
Usually we're out there in April. When the ground's fit. One of the things, advantages of this new toolbar that we got coming in is we got the ability to side dress now.
Okay.
Which will help us tremendously on our more sandy soils. Gives us an opportunity to put it out there. But typically we put a 28 application down with the corn planter and we'll come back in with the toolbar and put down pre-emerge with the toolbar. We might do some side dressing with the toolbar this next year. I don't know. First year with it, we'll see how it goes with the pre-apply.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also put in, if there's a problem out there, we're going to go out and address it with the Haggy with our Y drops.
Okay.
With 28. And then we also have several irrigation systems that we put 28 through to get that boost late in the season.
Interesting.
Spoon feed that corn crop.
I'm just curious because I'm toying with, with the muck ground that I have, I never, never mess with anhydrous. I don't need to get myself in trouble trying to knife anhydrous down into that. So I'm a 28 guy is what I've been pretty much the entire my entire career here. But I this year I'm kicking around, maybe trying to switch to some urea. See how using urea goes this year. So, and I don't know why. I guess I'm exploring. So, curious.
I have not heard very good results with urea. That's just the general thing that I've been hearing out there is, boy, it doesn't quite work like anhydrous ammonia. It doesn't quite work with 28. And I'm beginning to think that is because it's a broad spread product. It's not in a row. You're not putting it by the row. The corn plant has to go and find it.
Well, and the other thing is, from what I'm reading, and one of the reasons I'm thinking about this is just logistics of how we go about it. But urea is heavily dependent on weather, particularly getting some kind of rain within a definite window of your application. Otherwise, it leaches, or not leaches, it's
evaporates,
atomizes, and goes away that way. So, I'm not sold on it yet, but I'm starting to look just a little bit and just see what it does for my applications around here. I probably am going to dabble with it first on the wheat, just because, like you said, it's a broad spread application, but instead of having corn in 30-inch rows having to go find it, you've got wheat in 7.5-inch rows that has to find it, and we'll see how that is. Now, I may end up burning some wheat too with it, so we're just going to play a little bit and see, but I'm starting to think about dabbling in the urea this year.
Yeah, with our spreader, I have not been impressed with the ability to spread urea. We've done urea over wheat before and scratched our head and asked, what did we do? And ever since then, I've been streaming on 28 on our wheat acres, but since then we've abandoned wheat because of the price.
Yeah, well.
Market's just not there.
Yeah, it's not there. You're right. I think it can come back. No, I don't.
There's a lot of wheat acres out west.
There's a lot of wheat acres out west. And look, it has a place here in Indiana. And just from a pure crop rotation standpoint, I wish we could get some more wheat into crop rotation. The market, you're right, the market for it is not that good. But I think that we do a lot more soil health work by having a three-way rotation rather than just corn and beans, that I really wish I could see more wheat getting put in out here.
I would agree, and it's a great time to put in your tile systems.
Mm-hmm.
It puts it right in that dry time frame in July that you can really do some good tile work. But as the wisdom of my father comes out, he goes, you realize that it's usually the 4th of July.
Yep.
And we're coming off of side dressing. We're coming off of spraying. We got irrigation going on. And now you're throwing wheat harvest into the whole scheme of things. And that is a lot to ask for our team.
Yeah, but your buddy Dave. Dave would tell you, you got to do it, buddy. You got to diversify.
Yeah. So
It's just an interesting conversation, and that's what we're trying to do here is start conversations.
I went and talked to my guys a little bit. We were talking and joking around a little bit, and I said, "Man, you know what we need is a bunch of quad barns. We'll put them up on the west side of the lake, nice and easy to get to." And they immediately said, "You're on your own, buddy."
Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody at one of the meetings that I was at, I think it was last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, but anyway, the topic came up of diversifying, and somebody said, well, do you have livestock? Do you have animals? I said, well, I wouldn't be opposed to having some beef steers or something like that. I said, but, the adage, happy wife, happy life, it definitely carries weight. I'm open to livestock. My wife absolutely is not. So we're not going to diversify into any livestock outside of the stupid chickens that we have. So,
well, my father says we're done with livestock.
Done. Never say never, Charlie.
He says that we're done, and rightfully so. I see his point. He's older,
Yeah.
And he goes, the last thing I want to work with is pigs again.
Yep. It takes a lot. It takes a lot.
Yes.
So.
Yep.
Well, we're going to leave it there at that. 45 minutes goes very, very fast. I want to thank our folks over at MacAmerica Ag Finance, 574-253-3433 for sponsoring this episode. MacAmerica can hook you up on land and infrastructure financing. An express loan application can be worth $3 million, and you can get approval within 24 to 48 hours. All you need, a couple years' taxes and a good cash flow balance sheet, and they can get you approved on that express application. If you need more information, give them a call at the Northern Indiana office. They'll work you through. Maybe even come out and see you ahead of Christmas. I don't know. It'll be tough. Christmas is coming real fast. Are you done with your Christmas shopping?
Well,
you're not done. Just say no.
Okay.
I can tell you I am.
We're counting on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I am done with the purchases. The deliveries have not happened yet. We are also counting on Amazon to come through. Some of those ones that said guaranteed delivery by, but, well, that's starting to stretch out a little bit now because I ordered them quite a while ago and they're still not here yet. So
all I'm going to say is thank God for Amazon and cellular connections and cell phones.
There you go. You did a lot of Christmas shopping from the seat of the combine, didn't you, Charlie?
Well, yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, you do what you got to do. But, sir, thanks for taking the drive down here again today. Next episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast is out in 1 week. Thanks to our friends at Hoosier Ag Today for hosting and distributing the podcast. And thank you all for listening. Subscribers and downloads are off the charts. Keep it up. Your downloads, your subscriptions, your likes all help fuel bigger, better guests. And boy, howdy, Charlie and I have a list of them after the calendar flips over to 2026. I think you'll be somewhat astounded by some of the folks we have lined up to come chat with you. Until then, he's Charlie Hooyan. I'm Ryan Martin, and this is the Little Red Barn.